Rick Mahn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, indeed, TNT, today's News Talk. I'm sounding a little low down in the old scale today because I have a bad throat. But hey, maybe this will take off and people will love this new radio voice of mine. Anyway, it's Friday the 12th of April. This is TNT, today's News Talk. I am Rick Mahn. I am actually locked and loaded, believe it or not. Yeah, I'm locked and loaded and ready to drop a lot of truth bombs and talk a lot of gibberish for the next 2 hours until the end of my shift. Hey, it's Friday. I am happy to see it. I don't know about you lovely people out there inhabiting TNTdom on our live chat. And of course, you can leave us a message, tntradio.live. I will endeavor to pick up on some of the comments during the course of the day. What's on the menu today? Well, I'll be talking to Gemma Cooper in just a minute, our news correspondent, dealing with today's breaking news in the UK and Ireland. I have multiple guests lined up, the first one of which, Mary Finch, will be joining me. She is the editor of Informed Consent Matters. We're going to be talking about some issues when she hops on at about 20 past. Basil Valentine is coming up at the end of the first hour. Chris Thrall, ex-Royal Marine Commando Green Beret, is going to be joining me in the second hour, along with Aisling O'Loughlin, one of Ireland's very, very finest, ranking probably number two after me, of course, being number one, Ireland's finest journalist. She's a close second. She's going to be joining me to talk about the installation in the first few days in office of the notorious Frank Spencer, a.k.a. Simon Harris, our new Taoiseach, or the new Taoiseach for the Republic of Ireland. So just to get the ball rolling here this morning, this brought a wry smile to my face. So O.J. Simpson, died, kicked the bucket yesterday. Okay, and that's not why I'm laughing, by the way. He was a bit of a character, as they say in my neck of the woods. He was a bit of a character. And here's an interesting fact that you may not be aware of when it comes to O.J. Simpson. So Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Cameron said that O.J. Simpson was almost cast as the Terminator in the first Terminator movie. I kid you not, this is real. So why didn't he get the job? You might be wondering. Well, apparently they didn't think that he could be sold as a killing machine. How wrong were they? How wrong were they? So this is a true fact. Was watching an interview last night with Cameron, and Schwarzenegger backed it up. It was almost O.J. Simpson as the Terminator. And of course, back then, I think the Terminator came out around about 1984. So obviously, no one knew what lay ahead in O.J.'s trajectory. But how wrong they were. They didn't think that he could be marketed as a killing machine. So there you go. How wrong were they? Just goes to show, doesn't it? Don't judge a book by its cover. Okay, especially when it came to O.J. Simpson. So, got to pause. We'll bring TNT's very own killing machine on in just a second, none other than Gemma Cooper. And yeah, we'll see what she has to bring to the table this morning. Hopefully, it's not a Fez plasma rifle in the 40-watt range, the Uzi 9mm. Anyway, that's a little bit of Terminator 1 quotations for you. But anyway, TNT, we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
Unbelievable.
24/7.
Listen to you every day, have for years.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, if I was going to make a movie about a female Terminator, I probably wouldn't cast you in the lead role, Gemma Cooper, for the same reason. I'd say, well, she wouldn't really be convincing as a killing machine, but would I get that one wrong? Would I have a James Cameron-esque moment in hindsight and go, well, actually, she was an absolute psychopath. Are you hiding anything from us this morning?
I mean, I was just laughing out loud as you recounted that story, because I love the Terminator movies, and I wrote one of my dissertation at university on Terminator 2. I'm an avid fan. There's a lot in there that is not fiction, I think. But I didn't know that. I did not know that. So when you said, you know, talk about art imitating life, or the other way around, whatever the expression is. But, you know, we couldn't convincingly portray him as a killing machine. Well, no, because he did a very good job of that on his own, didn't he? That's the thing.
Yeah. And they got away with it.
He got away with it. I mean, but that's such a brilliant story, Rick. Absolutely brilliant. Didn't know it. I'm going to nick it myself and tell anyone that will listen later. That's an amazing story.
Didn't know you were a Terminator fan. I've met Michael Biehn, who actually played Reese in the first Terminator movie, you know, Sarah Connor's love interest. So I actually met him at a convention in Belfast. And I was discussing, I love the first Terminator film. I think it's the best one, personally speaking, because it was so revolutionary and groundbreaking at the time. But there's a scene where the Terminators come into this underground bunker and they're shooting off the laser rifles, and he falls over, and he has that, you know, that Polaroid picture that Sarah Connor gets taken at the gas station at the end of the movie. And of course, then he goes back in time and he's in the future. It's all weird, but that photograph just burns up and you hear the screaming. We'll get goose pimples just talking about it. But it was really cool to be able to talk to him about that scene, because he was in it. It was quite weird, actually. So yeah, I'm a big T1 fan as well. But anyway, OJ, may he burn in hell. I mean, may he rest in peace for all eternity. Yeah, he's gone. He's history. Let's talk about what's breaking this morning. What's on the table today?
Well, if you just indulge me this one thing, because I'm such a huge Terminator fan and also all science fiction, there is this school of thought about James Cameron, Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, Steven Spielberg, George Lucas. Now, allegedly, I'm not making this story up, it's a story. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But allegedly, they used to sit together and they used to channel together and download science fiction. Was it science fiction or science fact? And then they put it in their movies. Now, well, that's all I'm going to say. People can go away and research that for themselves. Mm-hmm. Gene Roddenberry, with the Star Trek creator, was at the heart of that. And he's often said that quite a lot of the things you see in the original Star Trek with Spock and Captain Kirk, you know, the original one, that came from somewhere else. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying on that.
One last thing that may interest you as well, just on the subject of sci-fi, and the movie Predator. I'm sure you've seen Predator as well, have you? Do you know who actually played the original Predator, as in the guy in the Predator suit, and he was sacked from the role?
Oh, my mind's gone a blank because I'm under pressure, but I've heard about this. But no,
it was actually Jean-Claude Van Damme, the famous martial arts star. So he was actually the first guy in the Predator suit. Obviously, he wasn't going to be seen because he had the helmet and the gear and all on, but I don't know what happened, but there was a fallout and he got sacked. But he was actually the first Predator in the first Predator movie before he was ousted. So that's another little bit of, you know, Cameron-esque, Schwarzenegger-esque trivia to kick us off this morning. So yeah, you can tell where our minds are at this morning, Gemma. So let's recalibrate. And is there anything actually happening? Because I must admit, I've been so obsessed with this OJ Terminator thing, I can't think about anything else right now.
Well, there's a lot of stories doing the rounds today. I mean, you know, let's indulge. Let's talk about movies. It is a Friday. You know, leisure and pleasure are on everyone's agenda on a Friday, aren't they? But there's a few things going on. I mean, the TikTok Taoiseach row does continue rumbling on today. Obviously, earlier in the week, Simon Harris was elected as the new Taoiseach, the chief of the Republic of Ireland. He didn't show up for work, did he? Instead of going to the Doyle, he did a TikTok saying how busy he was. He couldn't attend. That came in for widespread criticism. Today, he has addressed security concerns about using TikTok from a cabinet office and says that he's absolutely adhering to security protocol. But this comes as a point in time where many world leaders are banning the use of TikTok in politics, because saying it's not actually safe. So he's not had a very good run in the few days that he's been the leader of the Republic. UK farmers, the beleaguered UK farmers, who are already under a lot of stress because of cheap imports and EU regulations. They've done a protest in Westminster, as we know. We've covered it here on TNT. But today they're talking about the weather, and they're saying that the absolute deluge of rain over the last few weeks has left crops underwater and their livestock at risk. And the NFU, which is the UK's biggest farming union, is calling on the government to do a hell of a lot more to protect domestic farming livelihoods, basically. And also, I thought this one's for you, Rick. I know you've been feeling a little under the weather, and you've got your gravelly, throaty voice on today, your radio voice. But don't worry, from Monday onwards, if you're in the UK, especially England, you can get your spring COVID booster.
Oh, great. I'll be down for mine and the 17 that have missed so far. I sometimes wonder, let's assume I do decide I want to get jabbed up, which I won't, of course I won't, but let's assume I do. Do I go to my doctor and say, listen, I've missed the first 15. Do I have to get all those first before I get my booster? Because you remember they wouldn't actually give anybody a booster before they had the first two shots. So I'm wondering how far back they will actually go before they will start sticking needles in your arm, or how many they actually put into your arm. Yeah, interesting one that. And of course, there will be people who are actually queuing up at doctor's surgeries, have no doubt about it, on Monday morning to get these jabs. But I do believe, Gemma, the numbers are way down on what they were previously. And just interestingly, on the subject of Simon Harris, the new Taoiseach, this is something I just found out yesterday as well. You can check it for yourself. On his X, or his Twitter profile, he's obviously verified as the Taoiseach, Prime Minister of Ireland, the leader of Fine Gael and a Wicklow TD. You know, on their profile on Twitter, you can put a link through to your website or your bio. Instead of putting a link through to his political party, Fine Gael, or something to do with the Irish government, he has a link to his Instagram page, I kid you not. So beside his location, County Wicklow, there's a link to say instagram.com/Simon Harris TD. So here we have the incoming Taoiseach, or the new Taoiseach, ensconced in his little position right now, making TikTok videos and promoting his Instagram page on his social media account. That tells me all I need to know about Frank Spencer right there. If they imagine how tacky is that, using an Instagram page as your web location as the new Taoiseach of Ireland. How cheesy is this guy?
Well, it's such a sign of the times, isn't it, Rick, that this is where the supposed real power lies, on these social media platforms, Instagram. You know, and you're a big fan of following old Rishi Sunak's ex Twitter account, and you come with some very wry observations about what he puts on that account, what he doesn't, his team does, and how wrong they get it. But they clearly think that this is where the votes of the future are coming from. This is where hearts and minds can be won. But I think there is a very valid point to be made about, is it safe and secure? Probably not, actually. We've done stories about outages here on TNT. You know, where does your data go? Also, who's coming in looking at you through those streams? Is your data being harvested when you kind of look at what the new Taoiseach is doing, or look at Rishi Sunak's ex account? There's a lot of questions here about the use of social media and why the politicians feel so compelled to go down that road with it. I mean, we can make a joke about it, but I don't think it's funny. And I do think he set his stall out, hasn't he? He didn't even show up for work on the first day of being in the Doyle at the Parliament. He did it from TikTok. And he didn't care about the response of his fellow parliamentary ministers from opposition parties or his own party. He obviously started as he means to go on. This is how he intends to govern, online. It's an interesting approach.
There was a little bit of a face-off going on between Mary Lou McDonald, who's the head of Sinn Féin, and Simon Harris. So what triggered his TikTok video was her standing outside the parliament, making a video clip, uploading it onto her social media platform, calling him out, saying, why wasn't he there at work? And then a few hours later, there he was sitting in his office, videoing himself, telling us how busy he had been all day, but he was nowhere to be seen physically on the day. So again, it's almost like this, tit for tat video off, this video confrontation going on between these leaders right now, which is insane. And it's also worth noting, for a brief time at the end of last year, Joe Biden's X account or Twitter account was actually hacked. Okay, it was properly hacked, and somebody was putting up, let's just say, very derogatory messages about certain racial groups on Joe Biden's Twitter account before it was pulled, and it was all the steps were taken to rectify that. But somebody did hack his account and was putting up very very dodgy messages indeed, allegedly from the fingertips of the POTUS, the president of the United States. So anyway, interesting. Sunak, by the way, doesn't have any. I've just checked his. He doesn't have any links on his social media. He's smart, but Harris has his Instagram link on there. So we've got to take a pause right now. I've got to splutter, just a little sip some water, and prepare myself for my next guest. So we'll talk again in the second hour. Gemma, all being well, as long as old Ricky doesn't kick the bucket. In the meantime, OJ Simpson-esque. And yeah, you have a good, whatever, 40 minutes doing what you're going to do. And let's reconvene here again for more breaking news in the second hour. I'll be right back after this break with more magic and wonderment here on TNT, today's news talk.
Sonia Poulton.
Since 2018, I have been documenting and making a documentary about the issue of transgenderism. And because the fact is, when I happened upon it around 2016, 2017, I literally could not believe what I was being told that I must believe. And that is, first and foremost, that there is some sort of anomaly of nature that enables some people to be born in the wrong body. Of that, straight off the bat, did not make any sense to me whatsoever. And then I could clearly see what was happening, that men were going into women's spaces and taking over women's spaces, such as sport, in all manner of places, in politics, and it really alarmed me. But nothing alarmed me so much as what was happening to children.
Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Come on, let the man talk.
We never censor our hosts.
Good. Now, talk.
Uncensored news.
Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Yes, TNT, we don't censor our hosts. That would be me. And also, we don't censor our guests. And that would be the wonderful Mary Finch, in this case, beaming in this morning and joining us here on Locked and Loaded. She is the editor for Informed Consent Matters. That is a resource that supports citizens concerning informed consent around medical treatments. Mary, good morning and welcome to the Madhouse, a.k.a. TNT Radio. How are you doing today?
Thank you very much. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. And, you know, we were chewing the fat just before we went live on there. You've got a little cat jumping around in the background. Cleo, I love cats. I became a late cat lover in life. My daughter got a little kitten about 3 years ago, and I love that little sucker to death. So if you see a little animal flying around in the background, do not fear. Mary is not under attack. It is simply Cleo, and it's all good. So listen, lovely to have you on here this morning. Informed Consent Matters. You have a website, informedconsentmatters.com. .co.uk, and also a page on X or Twitter at Matters Informed. This whole business, I was having a little browse through your website last night, and this is something I've spoke to various people about before. Giving consent to get a medical procedure done is not the same as getting informed consent before you agree to have that procedure done. And I think a lot of people are not aware of that. Usually a form is shoved under someone's nose if they're going for an operation in hospital. They might have a very brief chat with a surgeon or a doctor and just say, sign here, sign here, sign here, and away they go. And then, of course, there could be complications from that, whether it be an injection, whether it be a surgical procedure. How aware are people that they need to have fully informed consent before they get any kind of medical procedure at all? Or do people just go with the flow, just sign whatever's set in front of them?
Yeah, I think they're by and large not aware at all. And this has been a really controversial issue in medicine for a long time, to the extent that the definition of informed consent actually changed pretty recently. It changed in 2015. So up until 2015, the official definition of informed consent was a doctor only had to tell you about the risks that were considered relevant by other doctors. So if another doctor said, oh, well, you know, that can happen, but it's not very common, so you don't need to tell patients about it, the patients wouldn't be informed. But of course, if a patient then went on to develop that risk, that's very significant to them. So their consent can't really be seen to have been fully informed. So what happened in 2015 is a woman had a complicated birth, which left her son with disabilities because she hadn't been told of the risks of having a natural birth and that she would have been better off having a cesarean section. And she attested that if she had known of the risks, she would have opted for a C-section and her son would have been healthy. So she took the NHS to court and she won. And she succeeded in changing the definition of informed consent. So that was called the Montgomery ruling because her name was Nadine Montgomery. So now the definition of informed consent in medicine is that you must be informed of all risks that a reasonable person in your position would consider significant. And that significance is not determined by how common the risks are. So even if a risk is very, very rare, for your consent to be fully informed, you must be informed of it anyway, because if you happen to develop that risk, then of course it's significant to you. And so that's where medicine now fails all the time in acquiring fully informed consent from people, in particular in the area of vaccinations, because it does not seek informed consent by telling people that, you know, there's these very serious risks, because what doctors will say was, well, they're rare. But that doesn't matter, because legally they are obliged to tell patients of them anyway, but they don't.
The other thing is too, Mary, that people think whenever they go into a hospital, for example, and say they have to get surgery done or they're going in, we saw it with the COVID jabs, people were just told, go roll up your sleeve, have a jab. If they had any questions about that, don't worry about it. You can ask as many questions as you like. And in fact, you can refuse certain surgical procedures. I had a hernia operation done about 10 years ago, and I really researched the hell out of it before I went and had it done. So when I actually ended up seeing the consultant, and I'm not a doctor and I'm not an expert, but I did some research, I said, listen, I've looked at the different meshes that you might be putting in there. This is what I'd like. And you've proposed keyhole surgery. I don't want that. I'd rather have open surgery because I feel there's less complications. And the surgeon actually said, good for you. He said, you've done your homework on this. He said, that's what I would recommend, but that's not what the first doctor had actually recommended. So people can ask as many questions as they want, and they don't have to proceed with operations or surgical procedures if they don't want to. I think people need to understand that they do have full bodily autonomy. And just because it's suggested by a doctor doesn't necessarily mean it's the best thing for you.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And there's something called the UNESCO Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights, and that does enshrine these rights that you've just talked about in law. And you are fully permitted to refuse any medical procedure for any reason, but also for no reason, without having any kind of penalty or prejudice attached. And this is, again, something that people don't know. As you say, they think if a doctor recommends it, you have to go with it. No, you can refuse, and you don't have to tell the doctor why you're refusing. I actually had a similar experience to yourself. I had cataract surgery a few years ago, and the first doctor I saw wanted to do it under general anaesthetic and told me there was no other option. And general anaesthetic is obviously a very serious procedure, and it comes with all manner of risks. And I said, well, I don't think that's necessary for what's relatively trivial surgery. But he was absolutely insistent. So I said, well, if that's what you're going to insist upon, then I'm going to have to terminate our relationship. And it was only after I left his surgery and kind of fired him that he then emailed me and said, well, actually, you know, we could do it under local anaesthetic if you want. But by that point, the trust was gone. So I just found another one anyway. But people don't know that they can turn doctors' recommendations down, and doctors can be very forceful. I'm amazed the NHS aren't in court all the time, because they do kind of flout the principles of informed consent almost all the time.
Exactly. And you have to ask yourself the question as well, why was he pushing so hard for you to go under general anaesthetic when he knew fine rightly that the procedure could be done under local anaesthetic, and that is something that you had actually requested as well. So that would ring alarm bells for me too, Mary. Why are they pushing a certain procedure? Why are they pushing general anaesthesia versus local anaesthesia? You have to ask yourself the question why. Maybe you'll never find out the answer to that question, but still it should ring the alarm bells, and you were right, I believe, to terminate that relationship and go elsewhere. So interesting one there. Just the message to the people I think we're giving out here is don't automatically assume that the doctor knows best. Don't be afraid to get a second opinion. Don't be afraid to do your research. And if you have a bad feeling about it, folks, say no, step back and reflect before you proceed any further. I think you've just testified to that. And I give a little testimony of that in my own circumstances as well from 10 years ago with surgery. So I've got to take a little headline break right now, Mary. When we come back at the other side, there's new proposals. MPs are proposing decriminalizing abortion up to 24 weeks. Amendment tabled by a cross-party grouping, including Stella Creasy, is the latest plan to modernise abortion law in England and Wales. We'll have a look at that, see what the implications for that are when we come back very shortly here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
And action.
The news.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The Australian Capital Territory government has enacted significant reforms to its jury laws in the wake of the Bruce Lehrman trial's mistrial, which was prompted by a juror's independent research. Southern Russia and northern Kazakhstan are experiencing their worst spring flooding in decades, leading to the evacuation of tens of thousands of residents as rivers burst their banks. O.J. Simpson, the controversial figure and former NFL player, has passed away at the age of 76 after a battle with cancer.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction.
Misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, all good here in the hood. Speaking with Mary Finch, editor of Informed Consent Matters, just having a little look at what informed consent actually is and the lack of it in many cases when it comes to either getting treatment, surgical procedures, or being jabbed up whenever you visit your local friendly neighborhood NHS service center. So, Mary, another story that's breaking this week. MPs are proposing decriminalisation of abortion up to 24 weeks. There's a cartel there led by Stella Creasy, plans to modernise abortion, etc., etc. What do you make of these proposals, yay or nay, good or bad or ugly?
Well, I think it's just evidence that the ruling classes are accelerating their depopulation agenda at every stage of the lifespan. So, they want to get rid of us at the earliest stages possible. They want to get rid of us at the latest stages possible. They want to get rid of us in the middle. In tandem with the stories about abortion, we also see that assisted dying is becoming more and more normalised and more popular, unfortunately. And then, of course, we're very well aware of everything that's been going on and for a long time before COVID, of hospitals bumping up the elderly. I think there's a top doctor whistleblower said that the NHS kills something like 130,000 elderly people every year. Canada now, assisted dying is, they've broadened the criteria. So you no longer need to be terminally ill. Now you just need to be have unbearable suffering. I've seen some news stories just in the last couple of weeks of young, healthy women in their 20s seeking euthanasia for essentially mental health problems. So I think that we need to look at the broad umbrella, and every time the ruling classes pushes through something like this, like, more liberalised abortion laws or more liberalised assisted dying, they'll always say, it's to give people choices, it's to ease their suffering. They'll frame it as if it's a very benevolent thing to do. But actually, they're always doing it for, a sinister, nefarious reason. And in this case, it is to accelerate their depopulation agenda, I think, at all costs.
Yeah, I think you're right on that one. And if we can tie this in a little bit with the informed consent business, again, Ireland's abortion laws for a very long time were super strict, and then they were pretty much completely turned on their heads about 8 years ago, give or take, or a few years ago anyway. But there was one thing that was enshrined within the Constitution, was that if a woman decided that she wanted to have an abortion, that there should be a 3-day period that she could reflect on the decision, because obviously it's an absolutely massive decision. And, you know, I can't imagine what it must be like to be in that position, to have to make that choice, you know, horrible. But there's a 3-day cooling off window in there. There's no push in Ireland to get rid of that 3-day reflection period. So if you decided on Monday that you wanted to have an abortion, you couldn't have it until at least Thursday, to give yourself time to think twice about it. Now, listen to this. These are interesting stats. This is from Health Service Ireland's website. So the 3-day period in Ireland, 80% of women still proceed with the abortion after the 3 days, but 20% don't. Now, that's 1 in 5 women do not go ahead with the termination if they're given that 3-day window to reflect and think twice about what they're doing. Now, if you extrapolate that across the amount of abortions that are actually carried out, so in England and Wales, they're at an all-time high at the minute. I think it's about 200,000 a year. If you take 20% of 200,000, you know, that's 40,000 children would then be born that weren't aborted if that 3-day window remains in place. So even they're trying to scrap that, they're bringing this the threshold up to 24 weeks. And they want to try and get rid of the 3-day period, which will again result in more deaths, more depopulation. Will they stop at literally nothing when it comes to this, even getting rid of a 3-day window to reflect on having this procedure done?
I think, unfortunately, you're right. They will stop at nothing. You know, they've got targets they've been quite open about. They're wanting to, you know, reduce the world population very dramatically. So they want to take away all barriers that are in the way of that. You know, this isn't a new development. I think they've become more open about their goals. But if you look at the history of abortion and the people who pioneered it, you know, they might have the reputation of being these great feminists and so on. But in reality, they were hardcore eugenicists. They were very racist. And all of their aspirations for abortion were about, in their own words, cleansing the race. So there's a woman called Marie Stopes. She has abortion clinics named after her. And she was an extremely zealous eugenicist, to the extent that when her son married a woman who was short-sighted, she cut him out of her will because she thought the condition could be hereditary. So in Marie Stopes's world, being short-sighted would be a reason to abort a baby. So I think looking back at the history of these people, Margaret Sanger in the US, and what they actually stood for, gives us real insight into what the abortion agenda is really about.
Yeah, and some of the justification as well, by the way, you know, When doctors, if a lady's pregnant and say an ultrasound is done and the doctor says, listen, I've got bad news for you here. The child might have Down syndrome. The child might have a cleft palate. The child might have this, and this. Sometimes the default position is to try and push that woman in towards having an abortion. And here's the thing, you know, when it comes to Down syndrome, for example, look at the outcry there has been over the last year or two when the do not resuscitate notices, it was found out that they were placed over the heads of, say, adults with Down syndrome. Everybody was up in arms saying, oh, it's terrible. They wanted to DNR those people with Down syndrome. Some of the same people don't have an issue with aborting children in the womb because they have the same syndrome, but they have a problem with a DNR notice being placed over a Down syndrome adult in a hospital bed. That's complete disconnect.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And unfortunately, you know, the agenda to rid the world of people with disabilities goes back a very long time. And the Nazis did something very similar to this. I think it was called the T4 program. And they basically did exactly what happened to COVID. They just tried to euthanize all the people with learning disabilities, mental health disorders. And what's happened now, as we see in every other area of life, it's just the depopulation agenda has been widened. So they're not waiting until people are born now. You know, if they can get it in earlier, so much the better, they believe. And I also understand that, I think this was during COVID, they started mailing out abortion pills in the post. So women didn't have to see a doctor face to face. They could just, I think, have some kind of FaceTime consultation and then get pills in the post. And, you know, I think the argument that this is about liberating women is becoming much more flimsy when you consider, you know, how careless and cavalier doctors are now. Just, oh, yeah, just have some pills in the post. I think that their true agenda behind abortion is becoming clearer and clearer.
Yeah, and just sort of to wrap this one up too, the 24-week period, a lot of people aren't really au fait with, you know, the development of a fetus into a baby that's then born. 24 weeks, it's a baby, okay? There's no two ways about it. Nobody can argue that because it's a fully formed child. The only thing is that it hasn't grown and had fat added to it. But even if a baby's born at 24 weeks prematurely, the baby still has a 40% survival rate if the child's born at that stage. So no one can argue, oh, it's not a baby, it's a product, it's a pregnancy, it's a product. It's not, it's a child, okay? So if you're terminating a pregnancy at 24 weeks, that's a child in there. There's no two ways. It's got arms, legs, a face, heartbeat, lungs, the whole shooting match. And I think people need to be aware of exactly what's being done here in the name of science and liberation. And again, it's a very complex issue. There's a lot of ins and outs to this one. People have different cutoff points in what they say is good and what they say is bad. But the bottom line is there's a lot of children being aborted in their mother's wombs unnecessarily. And it's being done, I believe, with a lack of informed consent and a lack of instruction to the mother. They're almost railroading them down that road the way they tried to railroad you down to get general anesthesia for a cataract operation. I think the same thing applies right across the spectrum with the medical profession, Maria. And it's disturbing to say the least. So we've got to stop now. There's a few other things that I wanted to talk to you about, but we're out of time. Time is our big enemy here. Maybe I'll talk to you again sooner rather than later about some of the other stuff that's going on with the ongoing COVID inquiries, especially the one that's taking place in Scotland. But for now, if you don't already do so, please follow Mary on Twitter or X. The page is called Informed Consent Matters. Website, informedconsentmatters.co.uk. And you have a Substack page as well. I believe, is it at miryaf.substack.com? Is that correct?
You can do it two ways. miry.substack.com or substack.com/@miryaf.
Well, there you go. So please get onto that. And anybody that's missed that, hasn't got a pen, a bit of paper, listen to the playback of this show. It'll be uploaded over the next 24 hours and you can get Mary's contact details there. So thank you so much for coming on this morning. It was a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully we'll do it again sooner rather than later, and have a great weekend. That's Mary Finch. I'm Rick Munn, and I'll be back after this break with Basil Valentine. Don't go away. This is TNT.
When a crisis hits close to home, and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Honoring. Protecting. Caring. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
I tell my son, I love you every single day. Now, my dad has never said that to me. Not because he doesn't love me, but because culturally it wasn't comfortable for him. Now that he's a grandfather, he says, I love you to my son every time he sees him. My advice to all the fathers out there, forget the cultural restrictions. They grow up way too fast for you to waste even a single precious moment.
This is Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on TNT.
Yes, Locked and Loaded, TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm Rick Munn, and I'm very happy. Yes, very happy to be joined again by my old sparring partner over the water in the UK, Mr. Basil Valentine. How are you doing this morning, sir?
Very well, thank you, Rick. I hope we never do come to blows, even if it is only sparring in the ring. Yes.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't, you and me, like, you know, and plus I respect the elderly. You know, I would go easy on you if we were together. I'm not going to lie. Or maybe you'd kick my ass. Maybe you're a dark horse. Maybe you're an ex-Golden Gloves boxer and you could lay me out with one shot. I don't know. I don't want to find out, but...
A lot of old boxers have started coming back. I think Mike Tyson is going to make another comeback, believe it or not.
He is.
One of these so-called exhibition bouts. Mm-hmm. We're about the same age, actually, me and Mike. So
he's 56. Knows. Tyson's 56. And I'll tell you this, Basil, he's still an absolute killer. He's coming out of, not retirement, but he's fighting this YouTube boxer. His name's Jake Paul. And Jake Paul's actually a young, pretty hard-hitting boxer. He's actually fought some big names and he's got some good wins in there, but obviously this is a money generator. They reckon it's going to make a lot of money. But I think Paul is underestimating Iron Mike Tyson, because Tyson never stopped training and he's in the best shape arguably of his life at the minute, and he can still hit those pads and move the way he did, almost the way he did when he was in his 20s. So you know, I wouldn't want to be on the other end of one of his left hooks, I'll tell you that.
Exactly. As you get older, certainly your reflexes slow, you don't have the stamina, you're not as fast. But in terms of one single left hook, all the power is still there. There's no doubt about that. So if Tyson connects, it's going to be lights out. There's no doubt about it. Let's hope it's not lights out in Britain. Or for that matter, the rest of the world, because this is a dangerous moment, Rick, isn't it? We've got World War III potentially breaking out in two different places. Iran is widely expected to retaliate for the attack on what it calls its sovereign territory, the consulate in Damascus. Enormous diplomatic pressure being applied to the Iranians at the moment from just about every country in the West not to retaliate. But at the same time, they feel they have to, because seven Iranians, including two senior generals, were killed when the Israelis bombed the embassy in Damascus. And at the same time, we've had James Heapy, the former defense minister, saying that Britain needs to get ready for war, believe it or not. We need to create a large strategic reserve force of thousands of veterans in case they are needed to serve again in a national crisis. Dad's army is coming back to Britain. Who knew, Rick?
There's a lot of provocation going on at the minute. And of course, the goal here is to draw Iran into a hot war. There's no two ways about that. Do you not get echoes? Are you not seeing echoes of what happened in Ukraine in February of 2022? And then the follow up by that had been going on since 2014, arguably, you know, the provocation with Russia inching ever closer to the NATO expansion, inching ever closer to Russia. And then, of course, what was happening in the eastern part of Ukraine. Putin went in, special military operation. He only had one objective in mind there. But of course, then he was being provoked. Can you remember they were talking about making Ukraine a no-fly zone, implementing a no-fly zone, which would have immediately led to an all-out war with Russia. And of course, the Nord Stream 2 sabotaging and all these massive provocation acts. I think we're starting to see that play out now more and more in the Middle East.
Yes, it's a very, very tense day, I would say. You know, we're seeing Western nations, and Russia as well, urging their citizens not to travel to the Middle East. France has just urged no travel to Iran, Lebanon, Israel, and the Palestinian territories, according to Stéphane Séjourné. The Russians have just advised their nationals not to travel to the region. The stakes really couldn't be higher. There's one possible get out, which is that the Iranians have said that they won't attack. They've indicated they won't attack through their permanent mission at the United Nations. If the United Nations Security Council passes a resolution condemning Israel for the strike on Damascus, on their consulate in Damascus. Now, It remains to be seen, it's very early still in New York, whether or not such a resolution is put before the Security Council. And indeed, if it is, what France, Britain, and most importantly, the United States will do. Of course, the Israelis claim that the Iranian consulate in Damascus was a legitimate military target, but nevertheless, it's of course a direct contravention of the Vienna Convention, the Caracas Agreement, various established protocols that even in the Second World War, you don't attack somebody else's consulates. So this is a particularly tricky moment. And at the same time, we've got German troops in the line of fire now. They've started deploying troops to Lithuania, the first such external deployment of its kind for Germany's military since the end of the Second World War, the result of Berlin adopting a firmer counter-Russia posture. Very, very dangerous stuff, Rick.
It is, and it's worth looking at that story, Basil, because of the numbers. Obviously, this is a very minor operation at the minute. There's only 24 soldiers actually being arriving in Lithuania thus far. The German contingent will be stationed there permanently. So what's the big deal? You might be thinking, well, why 24 as well? 24 German soldiers stationed in Lithuania. But it's significant in that, as you rightly pointed out, it's the first time since World War II that type of external deployment has happened with Germany. The current Germany leads a NATO deployment in Lithuania of some 1,000 troops, which is temporary. However, and this is the important part, and crucially, and sure to trigger alarm for Moscow, the permanent German force in Lithuania is slated to grow to 4,800 by the year 2027. German military leadership is touting this as a direct response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and aggression. So 2 becomes 4,800 very quickly. And of course, that's assuming Germany sticks to those numbers. They could deploy as many people in there as they feel like at any time. Why wait until 2027? 4,800. Those are just figures. They can pretty much move around as they like.
And why aren't there any peace talks, Rick? You know, but Speaking of the Second World War and breaking of precedents, here's one that's sort of vaguely light-hearted, if I can say so. Anyone seeking to join the Royal Navy will no longer need to be able to prove that they can swim in what one defence calls a desperate relaxing of standards to tackle a recruitment crisis. Non-swimmers or weak swimmers no longer need to take lessons in their own time before signing up for the Royal Navy, something that could have turned prospective candidates off. Well, let's just hope that they don't sink, because that's where they'll find out they jolly well needed to swim, Rick.
Yeah, you know, it helps if you're in the Navy. It's not rocket science here we're talking about. It would be helpful to actually be able to swim, because you just may be stranded at sea. You may not have a life jacket or a life raft, and you may end up having to do the front crawl, the backstroke, or the butterfly to get yourself back to dry land again. So interesting the way that this is putting it. It's looked upon as a barrier to recruitment. It's a 30-minute swim test. And I mean, it's not that difficult to do. I see pensioners all the time heading to the swimming pool. Near where I live, there's a group of geriatrics. They call themselves the Chunky Dunkers. And they're in the Irish Sea 5 days a week, swimming out to a lighthouse and back again. If those old folk can do it, no disrespect to them, young people coming into the Royal Navy should be up for a task like this. And recently as well, Basil, we saw, there's a test called the shuttle run. It's a fitness test. The police used to employ this, but so many women were failing this, and I'm not being sexist here, I'm just talking about the figures. So many women were failing the shuttle run test that they decided to scrap it or make it a lot easier and more possible just to get more recruits through the door. What about quality over quantity? Is that not more important these days? Is it not better to have 5 good, fit, sturdy, healthy cops than 20 roly-polies that can't even do a shuttle run?
Well, you would think so, but Navy chiefs have been under pressure to improve recruitment after a very serious drop in numbers. Strange parallel with the trans issues here, because apparently from now on applicants will be able to self-declare that they can swim. So just as you can now self-declare that you're a member of of the opposite sex. You can now self-declare you can swim. I wonder what else you'll be able to self-declare about before long, Rick, you know.
Or even identify. You can identify as a fish, you know, if you ask what your pronouns
That's
are.
Right.
You could say splish splosh, you know, and I'm a fish, I'm a carp, or I'm an orca killer whale. It wouldn't surprise me, Basil, if that was the next thing for the recruitment drive for the Navy. But there you go. And strangely enough, actually, I have in the second hour, I've got Chris Thrall coming on. He's an ex-Royal Marine Commando, Green Beret. It would be I'm going to ask him what his thoughts are on this abolishment of the 30-minute swim test, given that since he left, the Navy's become an ultra-marathoner and he's ran from Land's End to Jonah Groat's sleeping rough at the side of the road. So it'd be interesting to see what his take is on these lower thresholds for getting into the Navy. There's another story we have here. It's Friday. It's nice to end on a little bit of dry humor here, I think. The Reform Party, we have been talking about them on and off for the last few weeks, have you and I? Different candidates being axed. Hope not hate seem to be their de facto go-to place to find out whether their candidates are suitable or not. Vetting by the media. Now, apparently, Reform UK are mortified after sacking a candidate they deemed to be inactive and unsuitable for business, but in fact he was dead. He couldn't be very active if he's dead, can he?
Yeah, they were mortified, and so was he, it seems.
Yeah,
he was rigor mortified. So yeah, well, you know, big expansion in the number of candidates from Reform. We reported earlier in the week they're polling around 15-16%. Only a few points behind the Conservative Party, but I'm reading this morning that as many as 5 million voters could stay at home at the next general election because they're so disillusioned with all the candidates on offer, alive or dead. Labour, in particular, failing to grab many target seats, with young voters turning away from the party over its positions on Gaza and so-called climate change. Widespread disillusionment with the Conservative Party on the basis of its absolutely abysmal record. And of course, we've got the insurgent parties. George Galloway was saying last night on the X platform that Workers GB plan on fielding hundreds of candidates in pretty much every constituency in the country, believe it or not, might have a Workers GB candidate. And they are demanding to be included in the opinion polls and given airtime in accordance with their new stature. But Reform and Workers GB both face the enormous hurdle of being ignored by the legacy corporate media and indeed by the rules around election coverage, which is determined by the number of votes you got in the previous election. Well, how can anybody break through if they don't get the same airtime? I'm afraid we're in for another round of those dreadful talking heads. But very significant that 5 million are going to stay at home. And that doesn't include those who've already passed away, Rick. They won't be voting either.
It's interesting, too, you mentioned about the airtime coverage is reflecting on, you know, percentage of votes at previous elections. And if Reform are being sidetracked by the legacy mainstream media, any attention that I've seen them getting, at least over the last week or two, on the alternate media or the, you know, the truth type movements or platforms, call them whatever you want, has been pretty negative. So not only are they being shunned by the mainstream media, but they're I wouldn't say they're being scorned, but certainly you know, holes are being picked in their strategies by other commentators. So they're not doing well on the PR front at the minute.
No, I mean, I think when given the chance in front of the cameras, both Reform and George Galloway's party, in fact, all the insurgent parties, are able to do a pretty good takedown job of the two big parties because they are so abysmal. Talking of strategies, MPs have now said that the government needs a TikTok strategy to help combat misinformation, that dreadful bogey again, Rick. Aimed at young people. Members of the Cross-Party Culture, Media and Sport Committee have said the government now needs to adapt to new apps and platforms that appeal to young people who are increasingly turning away from traditional sources of news. and tuning into TNT instead, I hope. And here's one of these dreaded phrases, Rick. The recommendation is part of a wider report being published today that calls for more use of trusted voices, such as scientists and doctors, to communicate important information and combat conspiracy theories and other misinformation spreading on social media. In other words, they don't like the truth.
No, they don't. They don't like the fact that we mandate it, and they don't like the fact that we lit that fuse for freedom and caused a massive explosion back in January of 2022 when TNT was actually launched. And interesting too, you mentioned about the TikTok response. You and I discussed this yesterday, the back and forth that was going on between Mary Lou McDonald making little videos and putting them up on Twitter, responded by Simon Harris, the new Taoiseach, recording videos from his actual office in the Dáil to prove that he was actually at work that day. And in fact, his link on his Twitter page is to Instagram, his Instagram account, not the Fine Gael website, but his own personal Instagram account. So yeah, a war no doubt will be fought on the social media platforms going out the rest of this year.
Well, it's the government basically saying that, you know, running controlling the BBC, ITV and Sky News isn't enough. We want propaganda everywhere. Our propaganda.
We gotta go. I can talk longer, but we gotta go. Time in this one, Baz. Thank you so much, and have an absolutely epic weekend. I'll be back after the break with more on Locked and Loaded TNT. Don't go away.